Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navahitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so Chaitanya Upanayanam, Nyaya Sutras, Sutra 117, page 28.
Jai.
Verbal testimony, shabda, is the instructive assertion, instructive assertion, upadesha, of a reliable person, apta. We already read the first.
Yes, first paragraph.
Yeah. The validity of verbal knowledge depends on two conditions. First, the meaning of the statement must be perfectly understood. And second, the statement must be the expression of a trustworthy person, that is, an apta. There are two main ways of classifying shabda, or testimony. First method of classification divides testimonial knowledge into two categories, based on the nature of the object of the knowledge. First category consists of the trustworthy assertions of ordinary persons, saints, sages, and scriptures on matters related to the perceptible objects of the world. Examples are the evidence given by expert witnesses in court. The statements of reliable physicians about physiology and scriptural declarations concerning the performance of certain rites. The second type of testimony consists of the trustworthy assertions of persons, saints, sages, and scriptures on matters concerning the supersensible realities. Examples are a physicist's assertion about atoms, a nutritionist's statements regarding vitamins, a prophet's instructions on virtue, and scriptural statements about God and immortality. The second way of classifying shabda is based on the nature of the source of the knowledge. This method categorizes all testimony as being either scriptural or secular. Here the word scriptural refers only to the sacred writings related to the Vedas and to the Veda itself. Hmm. Did you get a bracket there?
No. Still yet to open it.
Oh, okay. So otherwise there's a bracket there. The words of scriptural testimony are considered to be perfect and infallible. Secular shabda is the testimony of fallible human beings, and therefore may be either true or false. Secular testimony that comes from a trustworthy person is valid, but the rest is not. The Nyaya system gives a detailed description of the nature of shabda, because testimony is considered to be a valid source of knowledge. It should therefore be analyzed thoroughly. In a scripture or testimony, words and sentences are used. But what is a sentence? What is a word? And what is the nature of their construction? Here, a sentence may be viewed as a group of words arranged in a certain manner, and a word as a group of letters or phonemes arranged in a specific order. The essential nature of any word lies in its meaning, and there must be specific rules governing the arrangement of words in the formation of sentences. Without such rules, the words spoken even by a trustworthy person, an apta, could be recorded to convey a different meaning from the one intended, or could mislead a common person because of the lack of clarity of meaning.
Interpretation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The potency of words. The Nyaya system states that all words are significant symbols, and that all words have the capacity to designate their respective objects. This capacity of words is called shakti, potency. In the Nyaya system, potency is said to be the will of God. The words used in a sentence have certain meanings because the potency is within them, and that is why they express certain meanings in a particular context. So the ordering of words in a sentence is very important. In addition, Nyaya maintains that there are four other factors that are essential in the proper functioning of sentences, and without the fulfillment of these four conditions, a sentence cannot express the intended meaning. These conditions are akamsha, expectancy, yogyata, fitness, sannidhi, proximity, and tatparya, intention. Yeah, so then what we're talking about in that other aspect of hermeneutics, they're not bringing in this point of intention. Because that Jiva Goswami then means we see is then by the traditional aspect of hermeneutics is about the intention. That the Veda, everything says is absolute. You know, it's correct, it's right. And therefore then everything, you want to go further or more subtle, then it has to be further development of this absolute reality.
Yeah, this is how Ramanujacharya defines religiosity, astika. In this verse from Bhagavad Gita, describing the nature of the Brahmanas, Shama Dhamata Pasha, Shama Shanti Rajana, Gyanam Vigyanam Astikyam. He says that astika means independent from logic, conviction that whatever Veda says is true. This is
independent from logic.
Independent from logic.
Yeah.
I mean, of course,
that's
from Monday logic.
Yes, yes. But I'm saying that that's still a very important thing. It's not because of logic you accept it. It means we logically present the Veda with the purpose that people will develop faith in it. But it's the faith in it that will be important. Because then you'll practice it.
And it seems to me that all this paper on this hermeneutics, it starts from the logic. This is the beginning.
It's logic. The beginning.
My logic is...
Well, no, no one's saying my logic, they're saying our logic.
Also... sorry.
No, go ahead.
Also in Kavya, now Kavya Kaustava, Sahitya Kaumudi, they're... Baladeva Vidya Bhushan. Is Baladeva Vidya Bhushan? So he describes that for anything that is expressed according to Kavya Shastra, the spiritual intent behind the words and that the direct meaning which is from the Shastras is the soul of the Kavya. And then the expression, the vigor, the clarity, and the sweetness of expression is the body. And then your articulation about the metaphorical and all the so-called grammatical whole thing, they're just the ornaments. So without the soul, they're bringing from the articulations and all the ornaments to at most the body of it.
Mm-hmm.
By telling or speaking on the spana, hermeneutics about the clarity, about that. But beyond that, there is the soul of the Kavya, which is the direct meaning intended from the Shastras and what is the spiritual aspect behind it. I forgot the exact term what you use for the spiritual intent, or if you really want to.
Direct meaning and the spiritual intent.
Transcendental benefit, something is there.
Yeah. I say it's here. You know what is meant by here about akamsha, expectancy?
Akamsha means what kind of desire you have. Is also akamsha.
What's the difference between that and tatparya, the intention?
Tatparya is what you intend to say, and akamsha is what is desired. It's two different things. No?
Means by. What you intend is, oh, what you means the point you intend to make, but then there's what you're going to expect to get from that making that point.
Yes.
Okay, and then yogyata will be how proper the word is, and the proximity, how they connect to each other. You see what I say? Big balloon, then it's talking about the balloon.
So is this Varnavada or Spottavada?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Now, why did you say big bad wolf? Now, is it the bad is big or the wolf is big?
Should be the wolf. It's both big and bad.
Big and bad. But it could be a little dinky guy, you know, like that Mexican wallow with the big hat.
Oh, so that, his badness is big. So he's big bad.
Yeah, it could be he's big bad. Yeah. Not that he's because otherwise he's only 1 foot tall.
There's no comma.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So that's the problem, the point of the proximity. Is proximity to what? If you said bad big wolf, then you know he's a very big wolf and he's bad. But if he's a big bad wolf, then he's, you know, of bad wolves, he's the biggest. You know, it means he may be the head of the what do you call it?
Or just he's the largest. He could be sleeping all day, and he's not even that big of a threat.
Yeah, that could also
can't
be.
Can't even move.
Yeah, or you could say he's a big bad wolf, meaning that he just sleeps all day, he doesn't do anything, so he's a bad wolf. He's not a good wolf. It's a good wolf that would be doing something.
Out hunting, like that. And bad wolf is actually good as a double negative. Because wolf is generally a negative thing because they're trying to hunt you. If it's a bad wolf, that means he's not hunting, so that's good.
Or it could also mean that he's a really cool dude. I mean, he's a bad wolf, you know, so he's a big bad wolf. It means he's the top of the, he's the biggest rapper in the region, you know, so he's the big bad wolf.
Yeah, so some context needs to be there otherwise.
Yeah, otherwise you wouldn't know.
There is a caption that came in the movie, just like, if you're bad, I'm your dad.
When, I don't mean to bring this back to this thing. When he was talking about the different levels of presenting, and so when you got to the ornaments, I was thinking that's funny because we're distracted by those lesser details because they're so tiny.
The farther down it goes, the more we're distracted.
Yeah.
And then we're taking those as the important thing, and we're arguing over that.
Right.
So as we're saying before, if you take the example of the seemingly two extremes on the social political level, and that how both are right. But then, are we talking about an equality thing so here, so they're making no distinction, everything's right, but what is right about them? You know, what's wrong? You know, and so those kind of distinctions aren't made, so then it just becomes this all homogenous thing like that. You know, or in some way like that, rather than it's all, you know, how do you say? Linear wouldn't be the word, it would be all. Because equal represents, generally you would think, horizontal.
Mm-hmm. Homogeneous?
It's all horizontal. Because you don't think vertical.
Right.
It's all the same, but it's vertical, then that's the problem, it's because you want to be at the top. Mm-hmm. So it has to be all horizontal. But the thing is then is it going somewhere? Because if it is, then is the right side the direction it's going, or the left side the direction? If that's then that means that side is better than this side. So you want to just say it's all the same.
Yeah, homogenous.
Yeah. It's just, so then if it's all homogenous, then the point is then how do you distinguish what's to be done, what's not, what's elevating, what's not, what's the basis?
See, that's the beauty of it, because then you don't have to do anything as long as you get the benefit. So we want to establish that you get the benefit from it, but we also don't want to do anything to get that benefit.
That means then you could be... You could do absolutely nothing and get the same benefit as the person who's...
Yeah.
So that means that the guy who just sits in his house and does absolutely nothing gets the same benefit of, what's Francis of Assisi.
Yeah.
You know, and he did absolutely nothing. Because they're all equal.
Yeah. Actually,
okay, so, and now we have... after this interlude, now we have someone who actually has an analytical brain. Let's see what they have to say. Yes, sir.
I just actually, if you try to get a gain without paying the price for it, mm-hmm. like they give example with people who abuse drugs, mm-hmm. because they release the dopamine, but they don't do anything besides just going out and getting the drug, the cocaine, whatever it is. This is, according to psychology, is the shortest way to, it's common knowledge, but to degradation, because you don't pay any price and you kind of...
Clearly he's never bought cocaine before.
Yeah, the thing is, it means the guy worked hard stealing his friend's refrigerator and selling it on the market. I mean, that was a lot. You know how hard it is to get a refrigerator down the stairs? I mean, it means you can just let it slide, but then you won't get much for it. So, you know, it was a lot of work.
I understand. So the point is that you condition yourself that you get this so-called enjoyment.
Because you're getting it for free.
Yeah.
It's like the thief. I was just thinking the other day is that these scammers and that, they work so hard, you know, on the internet doing these things and getting things. That same work, they could just have a regular job. In fact, some of them, when they get big enough, then they do get jobs. They get hired by the company so that nobody can do that to them. Yeah. But that's the thing, is that there's this idea it's free, or gambling, it's free.
Yeah, gambling is not.
You know? But it's not. You know?
The two guys standing outside.
Out here?
No, to kick you out before entering the gambling house itself, if you're not qualified.
Yes, you're not qualified.
So if you are a successful gambler, luck has actually nothing, or the odds have nothing to do with it.
No, it's because you know what's going on. Yeah. So that's why they don't want those people. That's just like... In the market, you have, I forget what it is, it's something, it's very small, maybe 8%. They actually are technical, there's a name for it, technical traders. Or something. They know the systems that it works on, so for them it's not a gamble. Mm. But the other 92% are the ones that everybody makes money off of, because they don't know, they just invest. You know, the magazine says, oh, this stock's going up, it's really good, so they invest. You know, but they don't know. And so because sometimes it is said the market is gambling, but it's only if you're that 92%. If you're trained, it's not just like business. If you know business, it's not gambling. It's a risk.
Calculated risk.
Yeah, but you're not gambling. You know, just like the politics, it's a risk, but you're not gambling. Or you're teaching, it's a risk, but it's not gambling. You know? So gambling is when it's not scientific. But, you know, at the same time, as if you're functioning in a gambling casino and you're, you know, one of those guys that, you know, how do you say, knows the numbers or, you know, like that, whatever it is, the method. Yeah, you can do all those things. You can tell that by what's on the things, you know what cards the guy's got. Then, one, they'll throw you out, they find out. But it's still a sinful environment, and the mood is still not... It's going to be a contaminating environment. You know, and so therefore it wouldn't be ideal. Does that make sense? Because it's based on all the other guys are gambling. You know the science. They're gambling. You're not, but you're getting your money from gambling. So still, it's bad money. You know, but it won't. You can say it's a business, but it's a bad business. It'd be like doing, business in leather or something. It's not a good business, but it's an actual business. But it's not a good business. So it'll carry something with it. So better to do something else. You know. Okay. Oh God. What was it? You know, go on the magic show or something. You know, do something else. So, yeah. Akamsha, the first condition, means expectancy. Akamsha is the quality by which all words of a sentence imply or expect one another. Oh, it means how one expects the next. That would also be, as I know in music you have, that if the guy's a really good musician, you can basically tell from the note he played just now what the next note will be. So maybe that's it. In other words, it just leads on, so you expect that word. So a really good writer, when they would write, they write the word, and then there would be the natural, the next word that would follow. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's when bad writers will put the wrong word. And so then it'll throw you off, because that's not what you expect. It's not what should be there. It is the need that each word has for the other words in that sentence. According to the Nyaya system, word is not in itself capable of conveying a complete meaning. That's true, because you can say, no, I can say a one-word sentence, but you'll say it with intonation, you'll say it with abhinaya, facial expressions, and all these other things. It must be brought into a relationship with other words in order to express the full meaning intended. For example, when someone hears the word bring, he asks or he thinks about what to bring. It could be a jar, a book, a pencil, a donut, or anything else. Okay. This is our man.
Right? He was asking to find the list, and he says, bring pizza.
Yeah, no donuts. No, wait a minute. Now, what happens if you're in New York, you're on this corner, you're standing outside of the donut shop, and you say, bring? Yeah. Then it would not mean pizza.
That's clear,
yeah.
Homing.
Huh? Homing.
Homing.
Oh, how many? Yeah, that would be the thing.
That should be the next expectation.
That should be the next expectation. How many? It's like you jump how high? Bring how many? But even that, it should be, it's just like there's two of you, so one box each, right?
A good donut.
Hmm?
A good donut.
Yeah, I mean, easily you could do one box.
Then you gotta bring some home for later, too.
Yeah, that's true. And three boxes, but then you have to share. It's a better four.
Yeah, sure.
Better bring five so you can put one away, because somebody may show up and you have to share that. So you bring the one box. Yeah, get a dozen. Yeah, that's standard. Yeah.
Like dozen donuts? No. Dozen boxes.
Yeah, dozen boxes. Yeah, so then when your friends come over, you share the one box amongst everybody. And then when you go away, then you get out the other boxes, one for you and one for your friends.
Seems fair.
Does seem fair.
Equal.
I would say is that to me, the appropriate word would be righteous.
Yeah, there you go. It's trickle down, donut of the...
Yeah.
We found the donut, so we get more...
Yeah, you're sharing.
Because it's simple to eat sweets alone.
Really?
Simple.
No. I mean, there's so many involved. I mean, there's your fingers, there's your mouth, your teeth, tongue. I mean, it's like it's a whole orchestra.
Parmata's there. So.
Yeah, it's like that. You've offered to him, yeah. So that's even better. That's more direct. That's more obvious. You offer the Paramatma and the soul, so two donut eaters sitting on a tree. Bhandashadik. No. Okay.
That's the donut samhita.
Donut samhita, yes. From the donut samhita. One of the more obscure Upanishads. Or maybe, because this is Paramatma. Jiva, then it would be Pancharatra, right? But,
yeah.
Thus, expectancy is the interdependence of the words in a sentence for expressing a complete meaning. Okay. So then it's also the interdependence, because there would be the line, but in English it's even more, because you have the word phrases, because you don't have... Not all words are declined. And it's not that the ones that aren't declined are avyayas. I mean, is that what they're called? And to, there's certain things like cha, ed, they're not declined. There's a name for them. We're not talking conjuncts. We're talking that words themselves, some are declined and some aren't. Even technically they've been built, but people don't know it. They just work with the word. They don't know grammar, so they don't build the word. But sometimes you have to use a word phrase. Mm-hmm. So it means that group of words. And generally other languages, that group of words would be one word that would have, you know, your suffixes and what do you call it? Affixes, and even there's one sometimes in the middle. Fixes. Prefix, suffix, and midfix.
Fix.
Yeah, and then that from what you brought up before, then there's just the fix. That's the donuts. You have to have your daily fix of donuts. Yeah.
But your example, Maharaj, with music is very good, because in music you actually have this, you're supposed to, according to the law, you're supposed to.
Should the next word should be you know, that whole thing like this, and then stop one note before. Everyone will be sitting there. No one will be. They'll freak out, you know. And then somebody will have to walk up on the stage and just with his finger push the note, and then everyone goes, "Thank you." You know.
Is that called? Is that cognitive dissonance, or is that something else?
They call it question and answer. It's a question, and there should be answer. And the new music, the new type of music, which is not based on this, it's called dodecaphonic music, something like this. It's not based on this, and it sounds terrible.
I mean, you do have that in tradition, but I think traditionally that's called flatulence. Yeah. You know flatulence? He knows flatulence.
Yes.
It would be, how do you say, impure air that collects in the body that escapes through one of the apertures. Okay. Yogyata, okay, fitness. The second condition means fitness. It refers to the appropriateness of the words in a sentence, to the absence of contradiction in its terms. For example, a sentence like moisten with fire, or he is frustrated because of his inner peace. That was the problem in the sleeping dragon and, I say, poker playing tiger. He was frustrated in his inner peace. Therefore, he came back to look for the lady. No?
Yeah.
No?
Which one is this?
Okay. Fire has no ability to moisten anything, and inner peace cannot be engender frustration. So that means that he had the wrong idea. Therefore, although these sentences may be grammatically correct, they do not express valid knowledge. Okay, so that's yogita, fitness. It actually expresses proper
sense.
Very much similar to this, what we had before, the middle term, the proper inference. One of them was.
It has to have that universal commitment.
Yes, it doesn't actually make sense. Erroneous ones, the wrong ones. It's similar to that.
Okay. Yeah, because there always has to be a connection between all these branches. Okay. Sanniti, the third condition, means proximity. It's very important for words to be used within the limits of an appropriate time and space. Okay, so proximity here is time and space, not next to each other. So that means that whole time we spent on Big Bad Wolf, that may have been speculation. And so then according to Prahlad Maharaj, that was a waste of time.
Okay, that could have been.
Yeah, no, that's bad. So there we shouldn't speculate when he first mentions it. Huh? If the duration of the use is prolonged, then words no longer have the capacity to give the desired meaning. For example, if someone who desires to make a statement speaks one word today, another word tomorrow, and the third word the day after, his efforts at effective communication are certain to fail. But if you know he's going to speak one word a day, then you're just, when he writes it down, you just write it down, and then, you know, after a week, then you have the sentence, then you know he actually needs to go to the bathroom, so that, you know. Yeah. The same holds true for the written word. If someone writes one word on page 1, another on page 3, one on page 5, and another on page 10, see, now that's the problem. 1, 3, 5, it should have been 7. Or if you're going at Fibonacci, because then that's 1 plus 1 is 2.
Right.
But he missed the 2.
Yeah.
Right? Then 2 plus the previous one is 1, it's 3. 3 plus the previous one is 2 is 5. 5 plus 3 is 8. 8 plus 5 is 13. Then we have Fibonacci.
Yeah,
no, yes. Yes, so that means it's definitely what he's talking about. Expectation of proximity, that was Sanskrit, was Sandhi.
First one, expectancy.
Expectancy, but this was proximity. Oh, see, but we were expecting it to go that way because we were expecting, so that was the akanksha, yes, exactly. We did not expect that.
Do you confuse
Then his meeting will not be communicated effectively. Continuity of time and space is therefore essential for a sentence to convey meaning. Okay, so it means rightly timed. You can't say things at the wrong time. Because somebody says something, and then you say something, and it's a big meeting and all that, and then you were asked the day before what you think we should have for lunch, and then now I think we should go with sandwiches. You know, it won't match because timing is off.
That always means, right, you put a board where it is how the words are phrased. There is a gap given, and then there is a one word, two words here. So either you can read two words up, down, and then again like this, or you can read straight. So that's another example where sometimes it gives an opposite meaning if you read this way.
Is that okay? Okay. Yeah. Well, it's like they use it in advertising, but they use it nicely. You see that they have a sentence, but they put certain words in bold, really, really big, bold and bigger size. If you read just those words, you get one particular meaning, and if you go back and read the whole sentence, then it gets some further. Yeah. I wonder how long that'll be go for before that dies out. Tatparya, the fourth condition, means intention. Intention. So the tatparya lingas are, what is the intention?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense.
So there's the real hermeneutics. There's the intention in the outer.
Yeah, the intention. So that's, you tell that by that, what they emphasize, what they do, so, you know, it's constantly saying is, you know, you see the words that are always, you see which what are the nudging words?
In addition, in our case, Śrīla Prabhupāda told us what is his intention. He told us specifically.
Yeah, he said what the society is for, this, that.
Are you sure, though? There is some ambiguities and room for...
Yeah, like you have in the book, right? You have the book. You have the cover. Then you open the cover. Then there's that first page which mimics the cover, right? That's the etiquette. But then when you turn that page, on the back of that front page, there's nothing. Prabhupada doesn't say anything.
Oh, so we can fill that whatever we want.
Yes, so that's where the ambiguity comes in, because then on the page after that, then you see something's written, but in between there's nothing. No. And all books have that in the modern printing, so that means all books have left open for interpretation. No? So when we print our books and on that page, you always have an arrow that points to the next one. Make sure, no. Don't stop here. Keep turning. And it refers to the meaning one intends a sentence to convey. So that's the meaning, not necessarily even what you're saying, because it can have, you can be speaking as if it's direct, people will take it directly, but you actually are, there's an indirect purpose. You know? Mm. It's like the political field. What was it? I never remember before. Read my lips.
No new taxes.
You know? And so when you say read my lips, are they saying just, I'm saying this is what I mean, or
yeah.
I'm saying this and read my lips, you'll see I'm saying something else. So.
And they want you to think it's the first one, but it's really the second.
Second one. There's no taxes. It means for big corporate, you know. It means if you're producing over a billion in gross, then there's no taxes. If anything under that, then it's 40%.
No?
Okay. A word may have various meanings depending on its context, so one has to be careful to determine the real intention of the person who used the word. This is also the case with scriptural testimony. Even the greatest scholars have disagreements concerning some passages because they do not understand the original intention of those sentences. A very simple illustration is this. Suppose someone tells you to bring him a bat. Like that. So you have no... You have no way of knowing whether you are being asked to provide a particular type of flying mammal or a wooden club. Depends. If you went to the Adams, you know, house, then it would definitely be a flying mammal.
If you're about to play baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it would be. Yeah.
But with no context, you might.
Yeah. To understand the real intention, yeah, well, I guess it also depends where you're standing, right? Like that. If you're standing in front of the sports goods store, then it most likely does not mean the mammal. Mm-hmm. But if you were standing in front of, you know, the witch's guild, then you know it's a bat. You know, the beast, the flying mammal. And while you're there, then bring an eye of newt also. No?
Only in the ashram they have this big bag.
Yeah, they stay in the ashram.
On trees next to the ashram.
Oh, on the trees next to the ashram. Okay, so if you're next to the ashram, it means that, because if you say a cricket bat, then that means you're in Maya. But if you bring the other bat, then you know it means...
Well, technically, yeah, Maya these pull. Bats really eat crickets, so...
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. But they probably only eat them if they jump.
Yeah. Yeah, if they were stationary.
They wouldn't. Hello?
Hello?
Okay. To understand the real intention of a sentence, one has to comprehend accurately the context in which the words are used. Because of the unique nature of the Sanskrit language and its symbolic usages, the Veda and related ancient religio-philosophical scriptures are full of this kind of a complexity and indeterminability of intention. In order to clarify this and understand the Vedic testimony properly, Nyaya recommends that one study the Mimamsa philosophy because it provides systematic rules and interpretations for understanding the real meaning of the Veda. Mm-hmm. So that means if you want to be logical, you have to study Mimamsa. So this other approach is not authorized.
So there are rules to interpret the understanding of the meaning. So you don't just follow the
rules? No. It means, in other words, you don't pick up stuff from somebody's papers and latest research things down at the modern university.
Veda actually tell you that.
It's already there.
It's weird that Krishna would foresee that someone might do such a thing and then give you the proper way to understand and interpret it. He's very well prepared, that Krishna.
Yeah, seems to be. But, you know. Yeah, and he's accommodating the individuality that people are going to come up with all kinds of strange things. But it still doesn't mean that just because you're an individual that the absolute truth changes.
So absolute truth can't change.
Yeah, that's the strange meaning of eternal, that it just doesn't change. It doesn't, and it applies for all times, all places, all circumstances, you know. Yeah, it's funny. Okay. Oh, I got it now. It's the presentation. He works it from inductive up to deductive. He gets you there. You know, that's his intention. But we tend to take it from deductive and then shove the inductive. So it's clear, because this way, until you get to the end, you don't actually catch. So someone in the middle might make a mistake and say, oh, Maharaj is saying this. No, he's not at all. His whole intention is this last point. You know, like that. Sutra 118. Yes, no, it means that it would be there. At the same time, as Prabhupada's so expert that how he wrote his books, that it's written so that, because it's in the instruction, it means by the Vapu, you're going to see so many nice examples and everything like that. But it's the Vani that's the most important. So then, through the Vani of the books, because Prabhupada says what the books say is what is the thing. So here, he so understands that you see his. Then that Mimamsa will make it clear what he repeats, what he this and that. But also then you can listen to the lectures and you can see him, how he says the point very strongly. But yeah, it means it'll help. Since it's being introduced and since people get confused, then it's good. That's why it's there. Prabhu pointed out, it's like Krishna, you know, had that arrangement, you know. So as Vedavyas, then he had his students write down these important elements. So for us, those important elements are taken and all the other stuff is left. For those who aren't interested in the absolute truth, they take what's left as the important part.
Because it somehow pertains to
them all. Yes, like that. So you see, is that, like, because Gokta mentions, like, let's say, the 16 padarthas, the parts of logic. But I think it's the first 10 are what's important, and the last 4 are not. And then within those 10, then there's going to be more important, means what you, means what is your methods and what you're trying to get to and this and that. So he explains that. But most people today, if you talk logic, they don't talk this at all. They just, logic means there's a progression like that. So they're not necessarily even aware of the, you know, how you say, what is it, the middle term, the
minor.
Major and minor, yeah. Now they're not even necessarily aware of all these things. I think if you go to, maybe if you do major in these things, or you go to debate school, you know, you join the debate club or something, you might learn these things.
Oddly enough, those will be the lower level philosophy courses that will teach you this logic.
Okay.
Yeah. Seems strange, but that's what you get at the university in the philosophy courses.
Okay, and they'll teach you this.
They'll teach you this logic. Yeah.
Okay. But they still try to use it so it's still open end. Like that. They'll teach it still in a way to. In other words, the inductive should never get to the point where it then you realize deductive is the actual position. Inductive just means, deductive means that you worked out the inductiveness, now we learn from you, so now it's deductive. But it never actually got to that point. Yeah. Okay. Sutra 118. It is of two kinds. What is this? What is the two kinds?
Shabda.
Shabda, okay. Namely, that which refers to matter which is seen, and that which refers to matter which is not seen. Vritti. Hence, in Anucheda 9, Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī implicitly points to Shabda Pramāna as the only perfect source of knowledge, but draws a crucial distinction between Apurusheya Shabda, Vedic scripture, the revealed knowledge, descending from superhuman source, Apurusheya, and Purusheya Shabda, the language used in worldly transactions. Therefore, Purusheya Shabda is bona fide only to the extent it is in line with and supportive of the Purusheya Veda. Maybe put a comma after line. Oh, I mean, so with. The extent is in line with, comma, and supportive of, comma. And then puts emphasis. Udriti. Right, so this is the point that you want to make. This is here. If that's understood, everything else makes sense. Right? This is the thing here. Udriti. Śrīla Prabhupāda. Even Krishna, he's God himself. He's speaking. He's giving reference to the Vedanta Sutra. Brahma Sutra Padaish Chaivam Hetu Madbhir Vinishchitaihi. Bhagavad Gita 13.5. So without reference to the Vedic literature, anything you speak, it has no ground. Shruti Pramana. This is Vedic culture. Shruti Pramana. It must be supported by Shruti. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will find whatever Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, he gives immediate Vedic evidence, Shruti Pramana. Then it is solid. So we are trying to present this movement with Shruti Pramana. Our Srimad Bhagavatam will be finished in 60 volumes, and Chaitanya Charitamrita is already finished in 17 volumes. So altogether, at least we'll have 100 volumes of books, small and big, to give Shruti Pramana. This is the example. Conversations, Tehran, August 12, 1976. I wonder if that means there's going to be so much more volumes. Because then 17 went down to 11 in the new printing. This is how they organized it. They took out space, you know, so much borders and everything like that. But I think the Bhagavatam is how many? I think it's 18, isn't it? It was 30 or something. Yeah, but that means that it was 30 up to 10, 14. So that means it would have been another 20 volumes, or two-thirds of that. So whatever it is now, the printing, is about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75, 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 100, 101, 102, 103, 104, 105, 106, 107, 108, 109, 110, 111, 112, 113, 114, 115, 116, 117, 118, 119, 120, 121, 122, 123, 124, 125, 126, 127, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7 has 2 or 3?
7 has 1.
7 has 1.
The big one. You're talking about the small one.
Yeah, I mean just the volumes. Yeah. One or more.
No, means he intended, so he said our Srimad Bhagavatam will be finished in 60, so he intended on it being 60.
Yeah, so that means that so we've finished it off in 4, 5, 6, in 6 volumes. Well, Prabhupada would have done it in quite a few more.
Alright, well, plus the ones that we have now are more volumes than what they are now. So, like, first canto had 3 at least. 3 or 4, 3.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying we cut it down. I think it was 30 down to 18 or something like that. And then, I can't remember. So then like that. So 60 down to like 30. But it should have been more by volume. So there might have been more commentary and more explanations in 10th, 11th, and 12th. Okay, Briti. Materialism and Buddhism as atheistic philosophies are considered low grade. Thus, the various Vedic philosophies start beyond this point. Nyaya, for example, offers the following 3 proofs for the existence of God. Existence of order in nature and man. Teleological argument. Existence of different conditions for different living beings. Different karma of individuals must come from higher intelligence. Existence of revealed scriptures, which basically speak about the same topics and one God. Thus, the scriptures say that the existence of God can be inferred neither from sense perception, pratyaksha, nor from logic, anuman, but it can be understood from the revealed scriptures, shabda. This is corroborated by the following statements. So there is, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur also then in Caitanya Shikshamrita, then gives these different arguments as you're going up in the levels of consciousness on why there is God. Like that. He says there's so many more, but these are all very, very logical, straightforward kind of things. Because you know, otherwise you think, why there's God, and then we have no answer, that he's given like so many reasons. You know, on different levels, and the levels go up in consciousness. Okay. So this is one, if there's order, because if there was more than one God, then there would be variety. Different parts of the world would be constructed in a different way. You know, people would be, very different. The laws of nature would be different. But no, it's all consistent, so there has to be one person. If it was chance, then why is there laws? You know, that's the thing. Science says it's chance, but at the same time they have the laws on which they base everything and say it's scientific. But if it's chance, it could change at any time. And we'd be seeing the change. You know, because if it's actually scientific, you have to have a good volume. You know, I mean, it's like I say, if you run an experiment, how much percentage of it has to be in the way that you expect? So, does that make sense? So you would expect at least about 50%. So that means 50% of what goes on in the world today should be happening by chance. It doesn't follow these laws. 50% of what you see or more has to be just chance. But because it's not, it's the same thing. Like it's, it's just so long and all this and that. But the thing is why would it all just change at one time? It'd be constantly going on. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, it'd be really, really annoying. You know, it's like, taking a wife to the hospital, and then the doctor comes out and says, yes, and successful. Oh, you know, was it a boy or a girl? Well, it's hard to tell. We're not so experienced with dodos like that. And so, but we're bringing an expert, a bird expert, and they'll tell if it's a boy or a girl. You know, this would be happening. But it's not happening. So that's the thing. Gautama gives his point, and so because it's logical, like that, it's you're able to perceive it. So therefore, supreme truth is neither established nor refuted by logical argument. Vedanta Sutra 2:1-11. Right? So you can't refute it. You can't establish it either, but you can't refute it. As a blind person cannot see anything, even with the help of a lamp or a mirror, persons who are averse to Lord Vishnu cannot see him, even if he stands before them. Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda, chapter 15. By logic, one may be able to understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists, but one cannot understand what he is like. Only by his mercy can one understand him. Sri Chaitanya Chandradoya Nataka, 6.147.
That's Jagannath. Hmm? It's from him. This
Jagannath. Okay, no. Oh, this is from him. Yeah, yeah. My dear king, the servants of Lord Vishnu are always very expert in logic and argument. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.22. Yeah, so you're going to have the point is that logic can understand that there is a Supreme Person, but you can't understand who he is. That you then have to hear from Shabda. So we may use logic to bring someone to the point they understand, but we're going to explain who he is from the scriptures. We're not going to continue with logic. That's why you see sometimes when you're talking about something in a past time or some more esoteric thing and someone tries to explain it, that it's logical, it should be like this, it's all right. That means wrong knowledge, wrong audience. If you have to explain elements of rasa by logic, they shouldn't be listening to this. You know, stick to nectar devotion. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada.